Hello, Rock Chalk Talk and our other listeners. This is Andy, better known as Mr. Brain on the site. We are coming to you again with another Across the Court Q&A. This time we are talking with Peter Bean from Burnt Orange Nation. We're getting ready to preview the upcoming Big Monday game between Kansas and Texas. Just a quick note, we are having some video issues today, so it's just going to be the audio file here for you, but we still wanted to go ahead and get this discussion through for you. So, as I said before, we have the Big Monday game coming up. Kansas, who just clinched their at least a share of the 12th consecutive national title. I'm not sorry, not national. Wow, getting ahead of myself. The conference title. against a very hot Texas team that just took over the end of the game and blew Oklahoma out on Saturday. So, Peter, real quick, I kind of want to start at the beginning because I know that, with this being Shaka Smart's first year and him coming from VCU and bringing his very unique style, what was the attitude of the fan base? What did they think about the hire when he first came on?
Well, for a second there, I thought I was on an Aggie podcast, 12 national titles. I want to come back to that, by the way, because
Most
that's
definitely, yeah.
kind of a big deal. But we could start with Shaka Smart, and part of the hesitation amongst some of us with the Rick Barnes situation was. It's easy to say, list out your dream candidates, but unless you're going to get one of them, and you watch UCLA hire Steve Alford, right? It's not a slam dunk decision, and it's a bit of a toss up. It was time though, and I give Steve Patterson credit for making the call to go for it, and he did get. He did get the guy that, makes it a pretty easy decision. I don't think anybody, when it was Shaka Smart that was named to replace Barnes, nobody was suddenly second guessing the decision. I mean, that if you told me beforehand we're going to get Shaka Smart, I would have said, all right, let's do it. Texas got the guy they wanted, and a guy that the fan base, which isn't all that demanding anyway, but at
True.
least those who pay attention anyway, we're happy. I mean, how could you not be? Won 26 games or more in each of his first six seasons. Obviously he's had postseason success. You listen to interviews with him, and he's sharp, and he checks all the boxes. He's young. I mean, he's as good a young coach as you could hope to hire, and he's impressed me more this first season than and I was already pretty impressed to begin with. So
Yeah, to kind of go along with that, I mean, what kind of expectations did you guys have for him coming into the season? First time through the Big 12, brand new system. There was always some kind of questions when he was at VCU how that would translate into a bigger conference. So what did you guys expect from him in this first year? And is there anything that really sticks out in terms of what he does or doesn't do that you either would like to see or you kind of wish he didn't do?
Well, in that he turned down a bad situation at UCLA, I think, wisely, and that's a pretty darn good job, and took the Texas job, was also a good job, but for slightly different reasons. But he also walked into a pretty good situation. Rick Barnes was building the roster. He cleaned house after 2011 and had to kind of start from scratch, and was building towards this year. This was supposed to be his year. Didn't get the chance to do that, but he left behind a pretty good team. So it's not like he's taken a ragtag bunch and made stars out of a bunch of two-star recruits or anything. That said, it is. The first year's tough, and he's had Cameron Ridley, lost him in December, and this team has really improved across the season. So he's done a really good job with this team. I've been impressed, but I'm not too surprised to see this team, having a good season. That doesn't shock me. With there's experience and there's talent, So he's not working miracles with the players, but he's doing a really good job with the group that he has, and it's a pretty talented bunch.
Yeah, I would definitely say he's done a pretty good job this year.
Yeah. Now I don't know that he's going to win 12 straight conference titles. let's talk about that for a minute because.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm certain that this streak is underrated nationally. Did Jayhawk fans realize just how ridiculous this run y'all are on is?
Oh yeah, yeah, most definitely. I mean, we all knew, you know, after the first few years, that Bill Self was a really good coach and was going to do a lot of great things for us. But I, you know, I don't think anybody when Bill Self was hired thought, oh, you know, he's going to have, you know, a top four finish the first year and then he's going to win it for the next 12 years and counting. You know, I mean, this is something, yeah, that's definitely unheard of. The only team that's won more in a row, obviously, we've all heard is UCLA winning 13 in a row over two different coaches. But, you know, back then there wasn't as consistently as many good teams in that league year after year.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gives
the best conference in the country a lot of these years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, actually, I did last year when we were talking about for number 11, I believe – I didn't actually end up getting to use it, but I put a chart together, you know, of just how where Kansas was rated based off of KenPom for each of those years compared to all the other ones. There was one year, I don't remember exactly which one it was, that they were down at like 6th or 7th, another year where they were like 5th, but after that they were, you know, 1st, 2nd, or 3rd every single year, and usually the gap wasn't that big, you know. Except for when the Big 12 was on top. You know, this has been a very strong conference. It's underrated nationally just because Kansas has been the one to win it. And the other problem has been that, you know, there hasn't been another good team like in the ACC where you have Duke and North Carolina that are both top-tier teams every year. You don't have that in the Big 12. You have, you know, Kansas has been up top every year, but then every year we have a different challenger who plays – you know, insane, and it's been Texas quite a bit too, but, you know, has really good talent coming in, just gels really well and pushes the Jayhawks really, really far. You know, we had multiple shared titles with Kansas State a couple years back, you know, Oklahoma shared it with us, Texas shared it with us. And so, I mean, it's a little underrated, or actually, I guess it's still really underrated. I was reading some today, they were talking about how big of a deal it is. And yet every single article ended with the tagline, but of course, really, the tournament's the only thing that matters.
Right.
So, I mean, really, this streak of conference titles, yeah, people don't really take it seriously. They don't think that it's that big of an accomplishment. And unfortunately, that's kind of the case. The only people that actually, you know, pay attention to it, well, I'm having a hard time thinking of anybody who actually gives it the you know, the weight that it should. We see a lot of people who either, you know, they can't seem to win their conference, or, you know, they have some good results in the NCAA tournament and like to crow about that when, you know, the Big 12 has some problems.
Yeah, well, even if you just look at it statistically, right? Even if Kansas was an overwhelming favorite every single season, you know, a giant amongst, you know, mortals, you know, even they're 90% favorites 12 years in a row, right? I mean, mathematically, your odds of stumbling once are not very good. You know, less than 10%. You know what I think it really speaks to. I mean, they ought to give y'all fans a damn trophy because y'all it's fog. I went back and looked at it, and since Bill Self has been there, y'all have lost 5 home games, Big 12 home games at the fog.
Right.
I mean,
and only 9 overall, right? He has only 9 losses at home.
I mean, that's the home court advantage at Kansas is, I suspect, the best in the country.
I don't think that I can disagree with that.
I need to get up there to a game. I've never been to the fog, but I mean, you don't have to go to see it, and then you know the numbers speak for themselves. So. It's pretty interesting. Now, you know, you did mention the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and obviously Bill Self is revered and rightly so, and, you know, one of the best coaches in the country and done a lot of remarkable things. He's got a national title. That said, you know, it was 2012, they made a run to the finals, but since then it's been a choppy march for the Jayhawks. only one trip to the second weekend and some early exits. Is there any angst amongst the fan base about it? I guess, I mean, for a fan base that as expectations as high as they are, I know it's disappointing, but is there any pressure on Self to get this group, on a run to the Final Four?
I mean, there's always that pressure, especially when you have a team, that's consistently ranked as high as it is. And honestly, this team right now, looks like it's all coming together and, kind of in the way that 2012, there was serious questions on that 2012 team. And then they just seemed to gel at the end of the season and made a huge push to that title game and ran into the complete ridiculous that was Kentucky that year. Yeah. There's always kind of that pressure, but a lot of the fans, other than, the ones that like to just complain about everything, a lot of the fans, understand how difficult it can be to go on a 6-game winning streak in the tournament. You run into a team that's really hot, one of your guys has an off day, and you flame out, and then that's all everyone talks about. Unfortunately, I think there is a little bit of pressure with this team just because of how well they're starting to gel this year.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, if something happened like the last few years, where we had a big man who all of a sudden couldn't play. I mean, last year it was Cliff Alexander, who was ruled ineligible because, from what I understand, his mother took a loan from an agent. And then the year before that, it was Joel Embiid, who had a really serious, back injury. And I mean, he still is having issues with that now in the NBA. So, right. He wasn't available all of a sudden in the Big 12 tournament and into the actual NCAA tournament. So that was a big change for them. They had a real big issue going in there. Assuming we don't have any problems like that this year where someone gets injured, someone that we rely on isn't available, I think the fan base would definitely be disappointed if we didn't make it out of the first weekend or even in some cases if we didn't make it to the Final Four. But, I don't think it would really be a big problem at all. The national media will probably have fun with it, saying, look, Kansas flamed out again. And especially if the Big 12 conference, doesn't have a good showing. If the conference as a whole has a good number of teams going to that second weekend and Kansas just has an off night, I think that it would be a lot easier for people to excuse that. But if the Big 12, makes like last year where, they had the basically four teams that were heavily favored go down in huge upsets in that first game or two, then there's going to be a lot of talk about how, the Big 12
right.
isn't really as good as everyone thought it was. And Kansas, what's Bill Self doing? He's not doing what he needs to do to get them, moving along.
Right.
Kind of to shift into that with the NCAA tournament, right now it looks like in all of the bracketology projections, the Big 12 is going to get at least six, probably seven. I think the last time I saw Texas Tech was actually up at like a six or seven seed.
Yeah.
And they're the lowest one from the Big 12. So, I mean, it looks solidly like we're going to have seven teams in the tournament.
Yep.
Do you think that that's where it's going to end up? And, I mean, what do you think that lowest seed's going to be? And do we have multiple teams make it to that second weekend from the conference?
Yeah, I think seven is a sure bet. If you guys are going to beat Texas Tech, that's a certainty and at Fog. But then I think they close out with Kansas State maybe at home. I forget if it's Kansas State or Oklahoma State, but it's a winnable game. Assuming they win that, they're a lock. Even if they lose that, if they can win one in the Big 12 tournament, I think that's probably all they need.
And if they lose that one against Kansas State, they'll be the seventh seed, so they'll get to face, I think it's TCU is down at 10th right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they'll get a nice, fairly easy one to try to get that one more win that they need. So.
Yeah, and by every measure, there's no discrepancy. The Big 12 rates comfortably ahead of everybody else. I'd be very surprised if Tech doesn't get in. They've got some nice wins. They beat Hawaii in the non-conference, is an underrated tournament team, very, very dangerous. There's your bracket tip. Whoever wins between them and UC Irvine is going to be a dangerous 14, I guess. I think we'll get seven in. After that, it's matchups and nerves and all these things that are impossible to predict. I won't. I won't try to venture guesses to how many teams are going to advance, but based on the seeding, we should get four or five.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one higher level that concerns me at this point is Oklahoma. Mainly just because, you know, it seems like people are starting to figure out how to guard Buddy Hield. And he looks like he's getting fatigued a lot, similar to like Frank Mason was last year, where, you know, the Jayhawks last year rely on him so much that he just started to wear out by the end of the year. It looks like the same thing's happening to Buddy this year. He's still putting up insane performances, you know, like the 33 points he dropped on you guys on yesterday, but it seems like, you know, they're starting to rely on him a little bit too much, not getting it spread around. I would be concerned about them getting upset in that first weekend, depending on the matchup. But
yeah, well, that's the thing about Oklahoma is they, you know, their one weakness is they don't have depth. They really rely heavily on that starting five. Lon Kruger's been around for a while, and I wouldn't be surprised if he picks up on that a little bit. And honestly, they shouldn't prioritize wins over the next 2 weeks. They ought to prioritize health and rest. But they're not gonna that starting five is as good as anybody in the country is. One thing, you know, building on our conversation on the streak that I wanted to ask you about, kind of like Mike Krzyzewski, who's had a lot of good success by he keeps a lot of juniors and seniors. And develops them. You know, Rick Barnes kind of got snake bit with some of his guys. Bill Self does a good job with that, and a really good job with it. And I'm not surprised that they're having the year they're having with Frank Mason and Perry Ellis. But Wayne Seldon has been a bit of a disappointment through 2 years. But it seems like he's taken kind of a pretty big step forward this year. What's your take on Seldon? And then I want to ask you a little bit about Devontae Graham as well.
Yeah, I mean, Seldon, he's been up and down this year. You know, yeah, it was a little bit of a disappointment, I think, in the first 2 years. But part of that, and Bill Self has actually talked about this, is that he was playing out of position. He's a more natural three or a wing. But, you know, with having, you know, Josh Selby, and then Andrew Wiggins, he had to shift from the three because those guys were natural threes, you know, superstars in their own right. There wasn't any way that he was going to displace them. And so he had to slide over to the two. He was playing out of position, didn't really adjust to it this well. He shifted back over to the three this year and really caught fire in the World University Games over the summer. For some reason, he wasn't really able to carry it into the season at the start very well. And he's just been extremely streaky since then. But he's talented enough and playing in that three position, he can get on a hot streak real quick. You know, but unfortunately he's had a few games here and there, or I guess a few, you know, periods of games where for three or four games, he's not really doing the scoring. He's still able to contribute somewhat off the ball. But you know, then he just goes on a tear and he lights it up, and then everybody's talking about him because he can't seem to miss. So, I mean, really Wayne Seldon, he's definitely getting there, and I definitely expect to see him become a really big part of it next year. I could see him, you know, kind of taking over that leadership position from Perry Ellis.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody expected him to be a 4-year player, but it looks like he's going to be. Now, if we're talking about Monday's matchup, what when you're watching, can you tell when he's on and when he's going to have a bad game? What are his signs of when he's playing well and when he's off?
I mean, it's kind of hard to tell just from, you know, the way that he is. He's moving around. But, I mean, really, I think the best indicator, obviously, is the first couple shots. You know, if he's missing them wildly, it's going to be a bad night. But really what it is how locked in on defense he is. I mean, if he is able to, you know, really be in the game defensively, really lock down his defender, he feeds off of that and is able to turn that into a good game on the other side. The other thing with Seldon is that he can have an off first half, but then something happens in the locker room, he comes up the second half, and he gets on a hot streak real quick. So I think it's better to talk about, you know, whether you can tell or he's going to have a good half or not, because he can have a really good first half and then go ice cold in the second half, and you kind of get that same in those same indicators at the beginning of each half. So it'll be really interesting to see how he handles the defense from Texas and how he's actually able to stick with his man.
Got it. Sorry, I kind of...
Not a problem. But yeah,
lost the audio feed there for a second, but I think you're done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Not a problem. So...
Are you there?
I sure am. Are you
there? All right. Okay, good.
All right. Okay, so yeah, going into that, we started talking about Monday's game. What would you say are probably going to be the keys to that game? Are there any specific matchups you think the Longhorns can exploit? Is there anyone specifically that you're concerned about on the Jayhawks just completely taking over?
That's a nice segue to the follow-up question I had, because I want to talk a little bit about Devontae Graham, who's kind of the quiet assassin for y'all's squad, it seems like to me. He worries me a lot. He is a Texas, our home court advantage is decidedly smaller than what y'all've got at the Fog, but our fans kind of pick and choose when they pack the place and are going to be bothered to get rowdy. But
right.
Kansas games we do pretty well with, and I think particularly after Saturday, it's going to be, it's going to be one of those capacity crowds that is engaged and pretty rowdy. And when that happens, the Irwin Center is a pretty frenetic place. And, I remember, I guess it was 2 years ago when y'all came to town and Isaiah Taylor's freshman year, and I think we got out to a 20-point lead or something like that, and won pretty easily. That's always a possibility. And but Devontae Graham's a guy who can really silence a crowd, because he's got in the gym range, and he scares me a lot more than I think his name recognition would otherwise merit. He's been, I kind of saw this coming a little bit, but he's really been terrific.
So, yeah, I mean, talking about Devontae Graham, he was I would say he was a little bit of a surprise coming in. But really what he's allowed us to do, he's taken a lot of that pressure off of Frank Mason. Last year, when Devontae Graham was just kind of a role player, doing a little bit here and there with the point, as the point guard, but really more of a shooting guard in the offense, Frank Mason really had to do everything. And this year, what we've kind of allowed him to do is to pull back from, always trying to do everything himself. Even, when he's driving into the lane and there's three defenders sitting there and he throws up a wild shot, we're still seeing that this year, and it's been a little frustrating at times, but having Devontae Graham there to give us a different look, to run the point guard a little bit differently, and then just his general athleticism allows him to kind of come at it a little differently. What's really come on this year, though, is his defense. We all saw, and that was kind of his coming out party on defense, was when he was able to lock down on Buddy Hield in the second meeting in Norman. Especially after Frank Mason fouled out, but Graham had already limited him as much as possible. It is to limit Buddy in that game, and to top it off, was a huge part of that offense. I would say Graham is kind of like a secret weapon coming into this year, but really it's more he's just living up to the potential that we always kind of saw in the last couple of years that you really probably wouldn't have seen if you hadn't been following this team closely. It's definitely a new look, and it's really exciting for the next, 2 years that he's going to be here. We'll have Frank and him again for one more year next year. And then after that, it's going to be Graham's show to run. And it's really exciting to see him kind of come into his own. It should be really interesting to see what kind of looks we can give Texas in Austin. Graham's going to be a big part of the game.
One last question for us. Imagine that cell phone service actually works in Austin, and Shaka Smart calls you for advice. Your life depends on providing the best answer possible. You've only got a couple minutes, but he wants you to tell him where Kansas is most vulnerable and how Texas should attack the Jayhawks on Monday night. What are you going to tell him?
Well, you know, it's still, as we've seen this year, is it's still to attack them down low. You know, Kansas doesn't have this year the really good, you know, big man down in the center, like we've seen with, you know, Marcus Morris, who can score in the post, Jeff Withey, you know, Joel Embiid. We haven't seen that type of player this year for the Jayhawks. And so, you know, we've been developing them, and Landon Lucas has started to come on strong, but he is still really the only consistent, true center-type player that can really hang out down low without having a lot of problems. He really is the only one that can back someone down and then score in the paint. Jamari Traylor has a lot of energy, but I would say he's probably just a little undersized for that. And he's been having trouble staying out of foul trouble. So really, I mean, that's the game plan, because Self likes to run high-low. They're shooting threes a lot more this year, but, you know, he still likes to run the high-low. He still likes to get the ball inside. And as we've seen, you know, being able to get inside what makes his offense run. But if Landon Lucas and Jamari Traylor start getting in foul trouble, it's going to be really hard to do that. Perry Ellis is a much more natural with the mid-range jumpers. You know, he can drive into the lane and score inside, but he's not the kind of player that's really good at backing someone down, posting up, backing him down, and turning around and scoring. He's been able to work on that a little bit, but he's definitely not comfortable, you know, camping down in the paint and getting down there and scoring that way. So that's really the key, is to try to get Lucas and Jamari Traylor in foul trouble. Carlton Bragg Jr. and Cheek Diallo, the two freshmen that were supposed to be coming in, supposed to be really big, you know, names coming in this year, haven't really been able to work their way into the offense. You know, a lot of that is just, you know, they had some issues getting in. Yeah. Cheek Diallo, obviously, with the eligibility issues with the NCAA, and that's a complete travesty. That's a whole nother, we could do a whole nother podcast on that and just talk about that. But he was never really able to work his way into the rotation. He lost a lot of practice time, a lot of time that he could be learning the system. Surprisingly, there's actually a chance that he could be coming back next year. I still don't know. He may end up jumping to the NBA, and they may end up, looking at his potential. But
Shaka Smart doesn't care. How do we beat you?
Attack down low. That's pretty much it.
All right. Fair enough.
So yeah, that brings us, I think, to prediction time. Ultimately, how do you see the game going? I know, I mean, with Kansas wrapping up the title, or at least a share of the title, this game doesn't really take on as much importance. But you know, I don't think obviously the Kansas is going to go and just not play anybody or not try or anything like that. But do you think that Texas can kind of take advantage of that a little bit and, you know, get a big win for their resume and bump that seed up a little bit? Or does Kansas try to lock up the outright title with a win here and not rely on someone else to lose for them?
We're going to be hungry. I can promise you that. And, you know, I mean, Bill Self will have his team ready, but you know, that there's always that possibility. I do think kind of the circumstances, to the extent that, they matter at all. I like our position heading in. We're fired up. Big home win Saturday. Potential for our fifth top 10 win of the season on Monday. So I think our guys are pretty going to be motivated. Our fans are going to be motivated. You know, we're playing. We're kind of building up momentum right now, peaking at the right time. You know, I think we want to keep that going. You know, you guys, I was kind of glad to see y'all wrap it up before our game.
true. And you know, another interesting note that I was reading today is that if Texas can pull off this win, they will have then beaten every single team in the Big 12. I believe they'll be the first one to have at least one victory against every other team in the Big 12 since Kansas lost against Iowa State. And obviously they played the return game on Saturday. So, it should be really interesting to see. I agree with you that I think Texas is going to be completely fired up. I think while I know Bill Self doesn't really like to lose, You know, we still have the chance to wrap up that outright conference title at home on Saturday against Iowa State in a game that they're going to be hungry for as well because they want to get that little bit of revenge. I think he's probably going to use this as a time to at least get some of those other big guys and some of those bench players a little bit more experience, especially in a hostile environment. You know, I want to say the game is going to win, but ultimately I think the Texans is just going to be a little bit too fired up. I think I have the Longhorns winning. I'm going to say probably, 78-74, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that feels pretty good to me. I hate to jinx it, but I call them like I see them, and I don't mind calling a loss when I don't think it looks good for us. But for the reasons you mentioned, I feel like we've got a pretty good chance. To take the counterpoint, Prince Ibe's back to the basket post game is a work in progress, to put it charitably. He does his work on the defensive end as well as anybody, and he's actually made some pretty remarkable strides since Cameron Ridley went down. But we're not a pounded in the paint offense, so your biggest vulnerability is not one we're particularly well suited to exploit. Perry Ellis is Perry Ellis. He's, for the third straight year, one of the top five players in the conference. And Devontae Graham is allowing Frank Mason to be his best. Graham and Mason are both quieting our crowd with 23-foot jumpers. You guys win on the road over anybody, and that's how you win 12 straight titles, along with never losing in fog. But circumstantially, this is as good as you can hope for Texas, particularly some of the obstacles the team has kind of had to battle through. And we've got a lot of positive momentum right now. I certainly hope we're able to keep it going on Monday. That would be set us up, for a pretty good shot at a protected seed, which when we, opened the season and listened to Bill Walton infomercial on China, which was just, couldn't hit a jumper to save our lives. We've come a long way. We've come a real long way. And I think that's probably been the most pleasant aspect of the first year of Shaka Smart is, whether by style or a bit of bad luck or some combination of two, the last 5-6 years, Rick Barnes teams, kind of peaked early and then faded down the stretch. This group is kind of hitting its stride at the right time, and no better test to measure yourself before the tournament than Kansas. So, as always, it'll be fun, and I hope this is the year we get back in the win column, Rochelle.
Yeah, that should definitely be a big win if it happens. I mean, especially since it's probably going to end up being ranked number one by the time the game actually happens. But I think the takeaway from all of this is, as we've seen time and time again in the Big 12 this year, you have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in any particular
game. That's right. It's been fun.
All right. Well, Peter, thanks. It's been great talking with you. I'd like to thank our listeners for, fighting through all of our technical difficulties with us. But we will catch you guys next time, and good luck to your team on Saturday. Or, I'm sorry, tomorrow night, Peter, on Monday.
Thanks, Brian. Good luck, and
yeah. All right.
Fog sometime. All right.
All right, have a good one.
You too.